You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
Today, Ian Durham's countdown of the top physics stories of 2014 continues.
So it's kind of like taking you and having you over here and having, I don't know, your soul over here. Which is just bizarre.
And FQXI calls for research proposals investigating the physics of what happens.
He's Brendan Foster.
And she's Zia Morali.
Welcome to the second of a special set of three podcasts this month, counting down the biggest and best stories in physics in 2014. Brendan, I'm glad you've joined me again to host this edition.
Well, it's not as though I have much choice. We're practically quantum entangled. You know, that spooky property that can link particles so that no matter how far apart they're separated, they are inextricably linked. So whenever you host the podcast, I have to host it too, even though everyone else is on holiday.
Well, Brendan, if it makes you feel any better, physicist and FQXI member Ian Durham of St. Onsum College in New Hampshire is also back working with us too. On our last podcast, also available on the website, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast, Ian revealed the fifth placed item in his top five list of the year's physics news. Now, in an interview I recorded with him earlier, he's on to item number four, which also, funnily enough, involves quantum entanglement.
Number four is a tie, and it's a tie because it's two interesting ideas that are related to one another. They're both related to quantum measurements. The first is a measurement where they were able to image something without directly detecting the photons that were producing the image. So when we look at something, we see that because photons are bouncing off that object and into our eyes. What these folks did, and cleverly enough, they used a little stencil of a cat, Schrodinger's cat. They entangled pairs of photons. And one set of photons went and hit in an object. And the second set of photons went to a detector. And what they got was an image of what the first set of photons actually hit. So they were able to essentially look at something without actually looking at it.
That was a very cute image, I think. We should put it up on the website somewhere so people can see what we're talking about, because it was a very sweet thing to look at as well. They designed something that looked rather sweet.
Yes, yeah.
Over the years, I guess, we've got used to talking about entanglement, you know, being able to do something to something in one place and it affecting something in another place. So with this experiment, would you say that this is something beyond that, or just that it's just very nice that they kind of went out of their way to show this, which really, I guess, brings home to you how weird this whole thing is?
It's a very strange thing. We think, oh, well, we do this all the time. We look on a computer and we can see, like, I can see you and you're not in the same room as me. You're not even on the same continent as I am. But that's a different thing than what's going on here. This is literally seeing something without any direct line of interaction between you and it. Whereas between you and me, there's a direct line of interaction with the electrons, or actually the photons and the fiber optic cables running under the Atlantic Ocean and the electrons in my computer and all that stuff. I can draw a direct interactive line between the photons in my eyes and you in Britain. You can't do that here. There is no direct connection between what they looked at and the image that they saw. It's just bizarre.
Very nice.
So there's a tie. I said there was a tie for this one. So the other one that was related to this, that some researchers used something known as weak measurements, which were first developed by Yakir Aronoff to essentially produce what's called a quantum Cheshire cat. So the Cheshire Cat from Alice in Wonderland was famous for disappearing but leaving its smile. So the cat was separated from its smile. So what they were able to do with the weak measurements here was to separate neutrons from their magnetic nature, which is just, again, bizarre.
You know, I remember hearing about it, and still now, it's just so difficult to visualize.
Yep.
You can see why they used this quantum Cheshire Cat analogy, because we've got that picture in our head. But it's just, it's just so... I can't even, I just don't even know how to picture magnetism walking around on its own somewhere without the thing that is magnetic.
Now, how did they do this? This maybe takes a little explanation. So what they set up was a beam of neutrons in an interferometer. So if anybody saw the award-winning FQXI video...
There's a bomb planted at the corner of Shenton Way and Maxwell Road.
Of Vlatko Vedral playing a, can I say badass?
Yes, I think we'll let you say that. It's a special for the end of the year. You're allowed. You're allowed that.
Vlatko Vedral playing a badass. At the end, Vlatko actually goes out of character and explains the idea behind the Elitzur-Vaidman bomb test, which is used in the story. And it involves an interferometer, which is basically you have a beam splitter, which for light is just simply two crystals just glued together. Now, it turns out in quantum mechanics that the only way to explain that in any sort of coherent manner is that the photons have to be in two places at once, meaning they've got to be, if you take a single photon, that single photon has to be simultaneously in both arms of the interferometer. Again, go watch the Vlatko Vedral video. He explains a bit of this in that video. Now, you do the same thing essentially with the neutrons. So what these guys did was they had a beam of neutrons that were all magnetized in the same direction. Now, how do we measure the magnetization of a fundamental particle? They all have spin angular momentum, as if they're spinning on a little axis. Whether or not they actually are, it's as if they are. And there's some magnetic moment associated with that. So all of these neutrons were magnetized in the same direction. So they were all spinning along that same line. So that's how you get permanent magnets. How do you get a magnet on your refrigerator? Well, you make it so that all little atoms and molecules in there are all spinning essentially in the same direction. That's a little bit simplified, but anyway. So the beam went into a beam splitter, which split not only the macroscopic beam, but it's just like in the photon case, it's splitting each individual neutron into essentially two pieces in the sense that the neutron has to be in two places at one time. Now, if you try to measure the magnetism in these cases, so one of the things that they were able to do is that they were able to find, you made a measurement along one path of the neutron to say, okay, the neutron is here. But then if they were to make a measurement of the magnetism along the other path, they were able to discover that you could get the magnetic aspect of the neutrons to appear in one path, while the neutrons themselves appeared in the other path, which is just weird. So it's kind of like taking you and having you over here and having, I don't know, your soul over here, which is just bizarre. But it's a brilliant, brilliant idea, but incredibly simple if you understand quantum mechanics. I mean, it's a really simple experiment that I'm surprised nobody had thought of before.
This was such a beautiful experiment and such a weird abstract thing to be thinking about. It didn't occur to me that it might have actual practical applications, but from Science Magazine, who wrote up this experiment, they have a comment from somebody saying that, you know, this technique could maybe be used to help physicists who've been trying to test whether Newton's law of gravity remains correct at a distance shorter than a millimeter. The problem being when they try to set up these experiments and they're trying to look at gravity, which is a very, very weak force, compared to electromagnetism and electromagnetic effects, which are very strong compared to gravity, these electromagnetic effects can kind of wash out what they're trying to measure. So, you know, somebody's suggesting here that if you could split the mass of the neutrons from their magnetism, you might be able to study the gravitational effects without being bothered by all of that electromagnetic stuff.
Yeah, and it's, I think these measurement techniques are just brilliant, and they're going to open so many new areas, not just in physics, but also in technology that is inspired by physics, I think, too, because there are going to be things that we're going to be able to do once we really get a handle on some of these things that we couldn't do before, because we can now make these exquisite measurements where you're, in a weird way, not even really interacting with the object you're measuring in a strange way.
So number four was a joint win for two of my cat, Puffy the Cat's, favorite stories of the year.
So is your cat Puffy? His official title is Puffy the Cat.
Yeah, pretty much.
I like that. It's very formal. Yeah. Sounds about right.
Stay tuned, because Ian will be back with number three on his list later in this podcast edition.
You can see an image of the paradoxical cat on the FQXI blog at www.fqxi.org/community. The image was created by FQXI member Anton Zeilinger and his colleagues.
And FQXI member Jeff Tollickson told us more about the Quantum Cheshire Cat experiment in a podcast extra in August, which is available to download on the website on the podcast page, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast.
You know, it's great to see our members featuring on, you know, the list of the best physics research of 2014. And if you want to become an FQXI member, one way to go about it is to win a large research grant from us. Earlier in December, FQXI launched its call for research proposals for work investigating the physics of what happens. Sounds a little bit vague, Brendan. What does happen in physics? Tell us more about the kind of research questions that could be funded here.
Yes, the physics of what happens. Everyday reality is largely made up of events, things that happen. The world of fundamental physics, though, is rather different. We have ways to label events like space-time points or the measurements of quantum observables, but these don't clearly match to something actually happening. So we have the question of how to connect what happens in these theories with the events that make up what happened in physical reality. We can ask things like, what is an event in quantum mechanics or general relativity? Are they fundamental? More fundamental than space-time, for instance, or do events emerge somehow from a more fundamental theory? And what about time? Are events ordered by an external time, or does time emerge from a sequence of events? And how does the flow of time come about from a sequence of discrete events?
So if you think you can answer any of those questions, then send in your proposals. The initial proposal is due in on the 15th of February 2015, and details are, of course, on the website. Go to www.fqxi.org and click on Grants if you want to find out more. And if you have any specific questions, then please drop a note to mail@fqxi.org.
Now, from the physics of what happens to what happens in physics in 2014... as we return to Ian Durham and his list of the top stories of the year. Here he is with number three.
Number three is the realization of laser fusion. And I love this guy's name, Omar Hurricane.
I was going to say the same thing.
I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but I love it. Omar Hurricane at the National Ignition Facility here in the United States has, so one of the dreams of people working in energy-related fields is to come up with some sort of, you know, a legitimate fusion power source. One of the problems with fusion systems is that to get the fusion to occur, we usually have to put in more energy than you get back out. Because to get two things to fuse together, you have to put in a tremendous amount of energy to get them fused together. Now, when they do fuse, they give off energy. So, you know, normally what's given off is way less. What these guys were able to do is, using a very powerful laser and a very small, I think it was only 14 meter length, were able to actually get fusion to occur, and the amount of energy they got out of the fusion process was more than the amount of energy they put in to the system. In this case, they were able to get more than 2.5 times the energy out of the process than they put in.
Yeah.
And that is pretty darn cool. But the fusion one is really a big deal, because we need a clean source of energy that, you know, is reliable and not horribly expensive to produce. And I'm not saying that this is it. This certainly isn't it. But it's an interesting first step. So people have been looking at fusion. Because fission, of course, the problem with fission is that's nuclear energy. And we know there are problems with nuclear energy. I mean, just look at Fukushima. You know, the problem with wind energy is that it interferes with bird and bat migrations. The problem with solar energy is that there are plenty of places in the world where it doesn't really shine. It's not sunny all that often, as we both know, being that you're in England and I'm in Maine. And then, you know, we look at coal-burning power plants, and they produce a lot of carbon, which is not good for the atmosphere. And hydropower is problematic because hydropower can disrupt fish migrations, and, you know, you have to flood an area. So fusion has been a serious study for a long time because people really wanted to be able to do something like this. Now, of course, there's all talk about cold fusion and everything, and this is not related to cold fusion. This fusion occurs at a very high temperature. You just were able to create it with the laser. And the important thing here is that you get more energy out than you put in. And that's what is the breakthrough.
We say that it's a breakthrough, but then you were also careful to say that this is a first step. So, you know, what are the next steps? What haven't they done?
Scaling it up. Scaling it up to where it's something that is usable, you know, on an everyday level.
So third place on Ian's list goes to Omar Hurricane and colleagues for laser fusion. Details are on the website, fqxi.org/community/podcast.
That's all for this edition, but Ian Durham will be joining us again for the last special podcast of December, where he'll reveal the top two stories.
And we'll be giving you tips on 2015's FQXI essay contest.
Until then, he's been Brendan Foster.
And she's been Zia Morali. I need a more exciting weather-related name, like Omar Hurricane.
I seriously love his name.